All right, so today we're diving deep into something that's been shaking up the world of international business.
Oh, yeah.
The Singapore Convention.
Definitely a big one.
For sure. And anyone listening out there who's dealing with cross-border contracts, yeah. Or even if you're just, you know, curious about how global commerce is evolving,
right.
This is one to pay attention to.
Absolutely.
And we're going to break it all down today using excerpts from this article we found called a Pasted Text.
Okay, sounds good.
So yeah, let's jump right in.
Right.
I think the big thing about this convention that's got everyone talking,
yeah,
is it seems like a major step forward in how we handle agreements reached through mediation.
It really is.
But I'll admit, yes. I'm a little fuzzy on how this whole thing actually works.
Okay.
Can we break it down, like, just starting with the basics?
Sure.
What is the Singapore Convention?
Okay.
And why is everyone making such a fuss about it?
Yeah. So I think the first thing to keep in mind is what it really aims to do is enforce these mediated settlements.
Mm-hmm.
Internationally.
Okay.
So think of it like a global rule book.
Okay.
A treaty.
Okay.
That makes it much, much easier to enforce agreements
mm-hmm.
that have come out of mediation.
Okay.
Particularly when you're dealing with businesses in different countries.
Yeah. You know, you're right, because before this,
I mean,
like,
it was a mess.
Yeah, it was like,
that was a real headache.
Yeah, how did that even work?
So previously, businesses, they had to get creative.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'd try to record a mediated settlement.
Okay.
As a consent award
mm-hmm.
in an arbitration proceeding.
Wow.
Essentially, they were trying to force it into the framework of the New York Convention.
So they were like finding loopholes.
Also workaround.
It is a workaround.
But it was clunky.
Yeah.
It was time consuming.
Yeah.
And it was expensive.
And expensive.
The Singapore Convention eliminates all of that.
Okay.
It's much smoother.
So it's basically.
Yeah, much more cost effective.
Streamlining the whole thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so smoother.
Yeah.
More cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, beyond that, what are the benefits? Like, are we talking real tangible benefits here?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
This is all about giving businesses confidence.
Okay.
That the agreement
mm-hmm.
they've worked so hard to reach
yeah.
won't just fall apart.
Okay.
Because somebody decides not to follow through.
So it's really bringing that sense of stability and predictability.
Exactly.
To a field where it was desperately needed.
Yes.
Is this convention like a one-size-fits-all kind of thing?
Well, not quite.
Okay.
There are some limitations.
Okay, what are we talking about?
So, for example, it's really focused on commercial disputes.
Okay.
So it doesn't apply to consumer disputes.
Okay.
Or agreements that are already enforceable through other legal means.
So it's kind of...
It has a specific niche.
It's like strategically focused
right, exactly.
on a particular area.
It fills a gap.
Yeah.
That was really needed.
I can see that. Yeah.
Especially when you think about the way the world is going.
Yeah.
We're increasingly globalized.
Yeah.
Businesses operating across borders more than ever before.
Mm.
Something like the Singapore Convention.
Yeah.
Becomes really crucial.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes sense.
It keeps those transactions flowing.
Okay. So we establish it's strategically focused. It's filling this gap.
Yeah.
But how does it actually work?
Wow.
Like, what are the elements?
There are a few key provisions to really pay attention to.
Okay. What are we looking at?
So Article 1, for instance.
Okay.
Lays out a clear definition of the types of agreements
okay.
that fall under the convention.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody knows what's covered.
So no ambiguity.
Right from the start.
Okay, I like that.
And then you have Article 5.
Okay.
This is all about making sure countries can't just back out.
Oh, interesting.
Of their obligations.
Okay.
It's a framework for enforcement.
So there's accountability here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And then there's another interesting element.
Yeah.
Article 8.
Okay.
This one deals with what are known as reservations.
Reservations.
Essentially caveats that countries can make
huh.
when they sign on.
Okay, so like loopholes.
Kind of.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so the Singapore Convention actually allows for two types of reservations.
Okay.
A country can completely exclude itself.
Okay.
Or its government agencies from the convention.
Got it.
Or it can state that the convention will only apply
mm-hmm.
if the parties involved specifically agree to use it.
Huh. So that's like a big caveat.
It is.
I mean, does that kind of...
It adds a layer of complexity.
Yeah. Does that undermine the whole
well,
point of the convention?
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
In the real world.
Right.
You know, will countries use those reservations strategically?
Yeah.
Will it undermine the effectiveness?
Like,
these are all questions that we'll have to watch.
Yeah.
As things develop.
Like a whole other layer to this.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So we've got this convention.
Yeah.
We've got these articles. Yeah. We've got these potential loopholes.
Yeah.
But what's the big picture impact?
What?
Like, what are people predicting about how this is actually going to roll out?
Right.
What should we be looking for as this thing gains momentum?
I think one of the first things to consider is the timeline.
Okay.
So the convention was expected to come into force in early 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But the real test is how many countries have ratified it.
Okay.
And what reservations they might have declared.
Ah, so it's not just about
right.
signing on the dotted line.
Exactly.
There's a lot of nuance here.
There is.
Okay.
So a lot of moving parts.
Give me an example.
Well, take the U.S. and India, for example.
Okay.
They have really lengthy ratification processes.
Mm-hmm.
So their decisions are going to be closely watched.
Makes sense.
Just given their influence in global commerce.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the European Union,
Correct.
How they adopt the convention,
mm-hmm.
is going to have a huge ripple effect.
Oh, yeah.
Throughout Europe and beyond.
So we're talking a whole web of
yeah.
interconnected decisions and consequences here.
It is.
It's like watching a political thriller unfold.
You could say that.
Yeah, but beyond the political side of things,
yeah.
what about like the role of organizations?
Oh, yeah.
In this whole process?
So groups like the AAA ICDR.
Okay.
The American Arbitration Association International Center for Dispute Resolution,
mm-hmm.
they've been big advocates for mediation.
Okay.
And the Singapore Convention could give them even more leverage
okay.
to really promote this
mm.
as a viable option for resolving international disputes.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Having these institutions
yeah.
kind of championing this thing
absolutely
can make a real difference.
Their expertise and credibility
yeah.
can really help to bridge the gap
mm-hmm.
between the legal framework
yeah.
and the practical reality of how businesses operate.
Now, this whole conversation has been incredibly eye-opening.
Good.
But there's one question that keeps popping up in my mind.
Okay.
With the rise of mediation through the Singapore Convention,
mm-hmm.
could this lead to a decline in arbitration?
That's a question a lot of people are asking.
Yeah.
I think it's important to remember
yeah.
that the Singapore Convention isn't about picking a winner
okay.
between mediation and arbitration.
Okay.
It's about giving people more options.
Gotcha.
It's about expanding the toolkit
okay.
for resolving these disputes.
So it's not about viewing these two as rivals,
right.
but more as complementary approaches.
Exactly.
Each with its own strengths and weaknesses.
Yes.
And the choice really depends on the specific circumstances
exactly.
of the dispute.
For instance,
yeah.
mediation can be great
mm-hmm.
when the parties want to maintain a working relationship.
Right.
You know, even after a disagreement.
It's more collaborative.
It is a more collaborative approach.
Yeah.
Whereas arbitration might be more suitable
mm-hmm.
when you need a binding decision
right.
for a neutral third party.
Like you need that third party to come in and be like,
exactly.
this is how it is.
Yes.
Okay. So the key is having that flexibility.
Exactly.
To choose the right tool.
Yes.
For the job.
Right tool for the job.
Okay. I'm starting to see how this could really empower businesses
yes.
to approach these international disputes in a more strategic and
yeah.
informed way.
It's not just about avoiding legal battles.
Yeah.
It's about finding solutions that work for everyone.
Right. And it's not just about avoiding. It's about finding the right solution.
Exactly. It's
yeah.
about shifting the mindset.
Yeah.
From conflict to resolution.
Yeah.
From confrontation to collaboration.
I love that.
Yeah.
So I think at this point, our listeners probably starting to see
yeah.
how this could impact their own
right.
international dealings.
Absolutely.
But before we wrap things up,
Koi.
What do you think are the biggest takeaways here?
Okay, well, I think the biggest takeaway
yeah.
is that we're really witnessing a huge shift
okay.
in how we handle international disputes.
Mm-hmm.
The Singapore Convention is ushering in a new era
okay.
where mediation is really taking center stage
yeah.
and is offering this more efficient, mm-hmm. cost-effective,
yeah.
and predictable approach
right.
for businesses operating across borders.
So if you're involved in international business.
If you're involved in international business at all,
yeah.
this is something you need to understand
yeah.
and be prepared for.
It's a game changer.
It is a game changer.
For sure.
Yeah, and the real excitement is watching how it all unfolds
yeah.
in the coming years.
Like we've planted a seed?
It's like planting a seed.
Yeah.
And now we get to watch it grow.
Yeah.
And see how it shapes the landscape of international business.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
But, you know, as with any new development,
mm-hmm.
there are always those lingering questions. So I want to leave our listener with a final thought to ponder.
Okay.
How might this convention, beyond its immediate scope, influence the future of international business negotiations and dispute resolution on a much broader scale?
That's a great question.
You know, this is a conversation that's just beginning.
It is.
And the answers are going to unfold.
Yeah.
As this convention takes root.
Absolutely.
And grows.
Mm.
Yeah. It really feels like we're on the verge of like a a major shift here in how international business is done.
Mm.
But I want to step back for a second.
Okay.
And look at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
What are experts predicting about how this is all going to roll out?
So,
like, what should we be looking for?
I think you have to look at this like a domino effect.
Okay.
You know, waiting to see which pieces fall and how they impact the others.
Okay.
One of the first things to consider is the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So the convention was initially expected to come into force in early 2020.
Okay.
But the real test is how many countries have actually ratified it.
Okay.
And importantly, what reservations they might have declared.
Because it's not just about...
It's not just about signing on the dotted line.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it.
There are a lot of nuances here.
There are.
Okay.
It's a lot of moving parts.
Give me an example.
We'll take the U.S. and India, for example.
Okay.
They have these very lengthy ratification processes.
Yeah.
So their decisions are going to be very closely watched.
Makes sense.
Given their influence in global commerce.
For sure.
And then there's also the European Union.
Right.
How they adopt the convention
will
have ripple effects.
Yeah, for sure.
Throughout Europe and beyond.
So we're really talking a whole web of
connected
decisions and potential consequences.
Absolutely.
It's like we're watching a political thriller unfold.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah. But beyond the political maneuvering, what about the role of like organizations in this whole process?
So groups like the AAA ICDR, which is the American Arbitration Association International Center for Dispute Resolution.
Yeah.
They've been strong advocates for mediation.
Right.
And the Singapore Convention could give them even more leverage to promote it.
Yeah.
As a viable option for resolving international disputes.
So having these institutions
that's huge.
Championing the convention could really make a difference.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, their expertise, their credibility
absolutely
can help bridge that gap between the legal framework
it's a bridge.
And the practical reality of how business actually gets done.
It is.
Yeah. This whole discussion has been incredibly eye-opening.
Good.
But I have to ask, with the rise of mediation through the Singapore Convention, could this potentially lead to a decline in arbitration?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Like, could we see one system eventually replacing the other?
I think it's important to remember.
Okay.
The Singapore Convention isn't about choosing between mediation and arbitration.
Okay.
It's about giving people more options.
Okay.
Expanding that toolkit for resolving these disputes.
So it's not about viewing them as rivals.
Right.
But more as complementary approaches, each with its own strengths and weaknesses.
Yes.
And the best choice really depends on the specific circumstances of the dispute.
Right. So, for example, mediation can be really effective when parties want to maintain a working relationship.
Yeah. I can see that.
Even after a disagreement.
Right. Like it's much more collaborative.
Much more collaborative.
Yeah.
Whereas arbitration
might
be better suited. When you need a binding decision from a neutral third party.
Like you need someone to come in and say.
Exactly.
This is how it's going to be.
Yes.
Okay. So it's about.
It's about having options.
Yeah. Having the flexibility.
Yeah.
To choose the right tool for the job.
The right tool for the job. Exactly.
Okay. I'm really starting to see how this could empower businesses to approach these international disputes in a more strategic way.
It's not just about avoiding legal battles.
Yeah.
It's about finding solutions.
Right. It's not about avoiding.
Yeah.
It's about finding the right solution.
Exactly.
That works for everyone.
And it's about shifting the mindset.
Yeah. Love that.
From conflict to resolution,
mm-hmm.
confrontation to collaboration.
So I think our listeners are probably starting to see how this could impact their own dealings.
Absolutely.
But before we wrap up.
Okay.
What do you think are the most important takeaways?
I think the biggest takeaway is that we're seeing a huge shift.
Okay.
In international dispute resolution.
Mm.
The Singapore Convention is ushering in this new era where mediation is taking center stage.
Yeah.
It's offering a more efficient, a more cost-effective, and a more predictable approach for businesses operating across borders.
So bottom line, if you're involved in international business...
If you're involved in international business at all, you need to understand this and be ready for it.
It's a game changer.
It is a game changer.
It really is.
And the best part is watching how this unfolds in the years to come.
Like we said...
It's like we planted a seed and now we get to watch it grow.
And see how it shapes the landscape.
And see how it shapes the landscape, exactly.
I love that.
Yeah.
But of course, like with any new development.
Of course.
There are always questions that linger.
Always questions.
So I want to leave our listeners with one final thought to ponder.
Mm-hmm.
How might this convention, beyond its immediate scope, influence the future of international business negotiations and dispute resolution on a much broader scale?
That's a great question.
I mean, this conversation's really just beginning.
It is.
And the answers are going to unfold.
You will.
As this convention takes root and grows.
As it takes root and grows.
Yeah. It's amazing to think about how one agreement can have such a big impact on on how business is done globally.
I know. It really speaks to how interconnected our global economy is.
He really is.
And you know what might seem like a small legal thing can actually have these ripple effects across industries and continents.
It's a good reminder that, you know, we're all part of this this bigger system.
We are.
And understanding how it works, how these systems work and how they're evolving is really crucial for anyone trying to navigate the complexities of of international business these days.
It's not just about staying ahead of the curve.
Right.
It's about being prepared for the unexpected.
Well said. I think that's a that's a great point.
Thanks.
So thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Into the Singapore Convention.
Yeah. It's been a fascinating conversation.
It really has. It's clear that this is more than just a document.
Oh, for sure.
It's a potential turning point in how we approach these cross-border disputes.
Absolutely.
In this rapidly changing world.
Yeah. And as we've talked about.
Yeah.
The real excitement
is
seeing how it plays out in the years to come.
It's like we've opened this.
Yeah, it's a new chapter in the story of international commerce.
And it's up to all of us
to
write the next page.
Yes.
Well, until next time.
All right.
Keep exploring.
Yeah.
Keep learning.
Keep learning.
And keep diving deep.
And keep diving deep.